Luister en geef je mening. Download de SBS Radio app. Stream live of luister als je tijd hebt. Stem mee met onze nieuwspeilingen en neem contact met ons op. Gratis van de App Store of Google Play.
Taalexperts wisten al jaren dat tweetalige mensen steeds meer dezelfde woorden gebruiken in beide talen. Kijk maar eens naar de computertaal. Maar nu blijkt uit een onderzoek dat het tegenovergestelde ook waar is. En dat meertaligen een taal juist rijker kunnen maken. Aan de lijn Dr. Mark Ellison van de ANU, het Center of Excellence for the Dynamics of Language.
The way that works is that suppose I'm a bilingual and I speak two languages that have quite a few words in common. So, for example, Dutch and English have photo as the same word, same meaning in both of them. And what happens then is when a bilingual is trying to make sure that they're speaking one language, like a Dutch-English bilingual speaking English, and they want to make sure that they don't accidentally say, for example, a Dutch word, then they actually have a monitoring process going inside, and it kind of blocks possible words they might say which come from the language they're trying not to speak.
Why does that happen?
Well, why that happens is because when we switch from one language to another, there's two kind of processes involved. The first process is what's called activation. So when I'm, say, speaking English, which is my native language, I am able to actually decrease the activation on my second languages so much so that they don't really generate much interference. But, for example, when I'm speaking Polish, which is a second language, then because English is my native language, it's always ready to produce words for me. And so I have to then filter out to make sure I don't say the English word instead of the Polish word when I'm actually coming to speak, because my mind is always ready, particularly if I've recently spoken English, it's ready to produce an English word for me, which is very convenient if I want to and want to change languages. But particularly if the languages have a lot of words in common, it can lead to this monitoring process makes false alarms. So it says, is that really an English word or is it a Dutch word? Oh, I'm not sure. Let's go with this other word, alternative word, which I know definitely is an English word.
Okay, so, but how does that add to the language then?
Ah, that's a very good question, because it doesn't actually add, it just takes away.
Yeah.
So it basically means that if you have two options and one of them is the same as your other language, you might avoid the one that's the same as your other language. Now, the way it adds new words is just by motivating low-frequency words to become more frequent. So the options that monolingual speakers might not choose very often at all, the bilingual might use those more often. So what we have as a nice example of how this works is it's been reported that in Catalan, where many speakers of Catalan now are native speakers of Castilian Spanish, but who have learned Catalan either as, you know, in school or as adults, they are now careful to try and avoid these words that are in common between Catalan and Spanish, of which there are actually quite a number.
Yeah.
And so what happens is they've actually revived some archaic words that have fallen out of use in Catalan, but were old Catalan words. They've revived those because, for example, they might look up a dictionary, you know, because they're feeling, no, that's not, I'm not thinking of the right word, I'm thinking of the Spanish word. Look up a dictionary to make sure, see that there's this other word that actually people don't use in normal speech, and they start using that. And that has actually brought back some words from earlier stages of Catalan back into the modern usage.
It's quite an interesting process, because one of the most dangerous things is when you think you know a word and you are wrong because you don't look it up, because you know you presume you're right. And I find that is one of the most dangerous things.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's an experience we've all had if we're speaking a second language. But have you also had the experience of you're racking your brain trying to think of, let's say, if you're a Dutch native speaker, and speaking English, and you're thinking, no, what's the word for this? And you just give up, and you look it up in the dictionary because you know it's a word you should know, and you find that the word is the same as a Dutch word. And that's,
yeah, very annoying.
Very annoying, exactly.
Well, why did you choose Dutch as a language to compare?
You know, it's really, in a kind of a way, it's a bit of a cheat. It's basically because both of us are English speakers, yeah, and Dutch is the closest language to English in the sense that it, in terms of its kind of core vocabulary, it shares the most words with English. So we were looking for the best chance to see this effect, to see bilinguals avoiding shared vocabulary, which we hypothesized but didn't have any evidence for.
Mm.
And so we chose to do the study on Dutch and English because in terms of like major sort of national languages, those are, Dutch is the closest to English in terms of its, both phylogenetically, in other words, they had a common ancestor more recently than, say, German and English.
Mm.
And that means that there's a lot more words that are quite close to each other.
They also had Dutch printers who screwed up their printing process, didn't they?
How do you mean?
when they first started to print in, yes, in Great Britain, the Dutch printers went over because they didn't have any printers. So they ended up with all these, because the end of the sentence, they didn't know what to do with. They couldn't quite end it. So they ended up with these really strange Dutch endings because the Dutch printers just thought, well, we need to fill the line.
I wasn't aware that it was specifically Dutch. I knew that, yes, there was this habit of putting in extra letters.
No, there were the Dutch printers.
The Dutch process.
So no wonder that...
That explains a lot.
That it explains an awful lot. So give me some examples of the words that you found that have been added to the language. Like Dutch people would do.
So what we, in our experiment, we didn't actually find words being added. What we found was that people were using some words more than our monolingual English speakers.
Such as?
So for example, this is one of the nicest examples, is that we gave a context, sort of little paragraph, which set the scene, and then we gave them a sentence with a gap in it, and we asked them to fill the gap because we wanted to really constrain the semantics of what was being, the words that were being used.
Yeah.
And so what one of the nice cases was when basically they were asked, told that the scenario was you're at a beach and you see a beautiful sunset, and then the sentence was, I wanted to take a gap of the sunset, and we're expecting either photo or picture.
Mm-hmm.
And amongst the monolingual Australian people, they've got their context paragraph in English, and then they had to fill in the gap in the English sentence.
Mm-hmm.
They filled in about picture and photo were about 50-50. So they're about equal. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the bilinguals who got their context paragraph in Dutch and then their sentence in English and they had to choose an English word to fill in the slot, but their brain was already a bit in Dutch
going overdrive.
Well,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Some of them did complain about feeling that way. They used picture more often than the monolingual English speakers, so even though photo was the same as the Dutch word, and even the whole phrase construction, you can say I think in Dutch en foto nemen. They chose to use the word picture. We gave a context, sort of little paragraph, which set the scene, and then we gave them a sentence with a gap in it, and we asked them to fill the gap because we wanted to really constrain the semantics of what was being, the words that were being used. And what one of the nice cases was when basically they were asked, told that the scenario was you're at a beach and you see a beautiful sunset, and then the sentence was, I wanted to take a gap of the sunset, and we're expecting either photo or picture.
Mm-hmm.
And amongst the monolingual Australian people, they've got their context paragraph in English, and then they had to fill in the gap in the English sentence.
Mm-hmm.
They filled in about picture and photo were about 50-50. So they're about equal. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the bilinguals who got their context paragraph in Dutch and then their sentence in English, and they had to choose an English word to fill in the slot, but their brain was already a bit in Dutch.
Going overdrive, well, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of them did complain about feeling that way. They used picture more often than the monolingual English speakers. So even though photo was the same as the Dutch word, and even the whole phrase construction, you can say, I think, in Dutch, en foto nemen.
Yeah.
They chose to use the word picture in that slot more often than the English speakers, monolingual English speakers, who they lived amongst.
Interesting.
So basically, they're avoiding using photo because it was the same as the Dutch word.
Yes.
And there were many other instances like that, but that was one of the most remarkable ones.
Yeah, I'm just writing this down, and I would have filled in image.
Would you?
Yeah. Yeah, amazing, that, isn't it? Yeah, without
That's
even thinking about it. And what are you going to do with this research? Where is this going to take you?
Okay, so one of the things that motivated us at the start and where we hope to go with this is we're trying to understand why, for example, in Australia, even though there was a fairly low population of humans living in Australia before white settlement, there were very many languages.
Mm.
There were, the estimates vary from about 250 up to 400.
We're talking about indigenous languages now.
Indigenous languages,
yeah.
That's great,
mm-hmm.
in Australia.
Yeah.
And one of the questions is why, with so few people, did you have so many languages? And the same question can be applied, for example, to Papua New Guinea, where there's in the whole island of New Guinea, there's over 700 languages. And we were really interested in this question, particularly in Australia, because my colleague Louisa Michelli, her PhD work was focused on the history of Australian languages.
Mm.
And we're trying to work out how it is that you got languages, for example, that were right next to each other. And if you looked at the grammar, you'd think these are, you know, they're kind of really closely related languages, like, you know, Danish and Swedish or something like that, but they had almost no words in common.
No.
And we're trying to understand how that could possibly happen. And the more we looked at it, we saw that not only were they next to each other, they had a lot of contact. So they would intermarry. So very often these societies are patrilocal, which means women leave their home community and move to another community.
Yeah. You think they take the language with them, yeah.
Exactly. You think that the children of those marriages, they do grow up bilingual, but they don't end up mixing the languages. Mm. They don't end up with lots of vocabulary in common.
Right.
But the grammar ends up very similar.
Mm.
So we were really interested in this, and we wondered then whether, is there some process that helps bilinguals in their thinking, in their cognitive processes, keep their languages distinct, and could this be responsible? So that gave us the idea to set up the experiment and see if we could find any evidence in, you know, for us, a very accessible bilingual community for a process that would make the vocabularies more and more distinct.
How are you going to continue your studies now? Where is this going to take you?
Well, I started this work with Louisa Michelli in Western Australia. I was working there, and I've moved to the ANU to join a project of Nick Evans on language diversity, trying to understand why some places have lots of languages and some have very few. So this project's very relevant for that work as well. But one of the more direct follow-ons is that we've started a project where we are doing a picture naming task. So we show up on the computer screen a picture and people have to name what's on the picture. Now, this is a very standard type of task in psycholinguistics, but what we've done differently is that whereas in the past people would always try and have pictures which had unambiguous names, so there's only one name you could apply. Like, if you see a picture of a banana,
It's a banana.
Yeah. Exactly. There's nothing else to say.
Yeah.
Whereas we're trying to come up with pictures where, for example, if there is a single answer, is it the same as the Dutch word or is it different from the Dutch word for the same object?
I see.
And then we're also looking at trying to make stimuli where the picture has multiple words in English, one of which is the same as the Dutch word, or else we have multiple words in English where none are the same. Mm. And at the same time, while people are doing this teacher naming task, we're recording their brainwaves.
You're going to have an awful lot of confused people out there.
We hope so. We're looking for the actual, you know, that process to see if we can identify something going on in the actual brain activity that correlates with what we, our model, which has a monitoring process. And yeah. The very early results are quite suggestive that if you're a Dutch English bilingual and you're trying to name a picture where there's only one word that you could use to name it in English, and it's the same as the Dutch word, it means that everything that's coming out of their associative memory is just the one word. There's no competition, really, between alternative forms.
No.
So that word is just sails through this whole process. Whereas even if there's only one English word to describe what's in the picture, if it's different from the Dutch word, our bilinguals have two competing words, one of which they have to filter out because it's the English word, and we actually see a trace of that in the brain activity. We see that they are having to deal with...
See the cogs turning, in other words.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.